upholding scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captive of a scientific, technological elite.
We've signed a climate convention on the importance of economic instruments and free markets. Were included in this mammoth Agenda 21 document and the Rio Declaration. Well, let me be clear on one fundamental point. The United States fully intends to be the world's preeminent leader in protecting the global environment.
Coming up, Technocracy News. And here we are on August 12, 2019. I'm Patrick Wood for Technocracy News and Trends. And I want you to know that there was a movie once upon a time where the inmates of an insane asylum took over the asylum and took all of the staff and put them in the padded cells instead. Nobody from the outside recognized the change. So when new people came to visit or check in new patients, they were greeted by the nutcases that were actually behind the padded walls before, but now they had on the white suits and they looked perfectly normal, and nobody had a clue what had happened, the big switcheroo. Well, you'll be happy to note, with that in mind, that the University of London, of all places, has stepped up to the plate, and they have taken a big swing at climate change and global warming. They're doing their part, they say, to reduce their carbon footprint and to save the planet from climate change. And here's what they're doing. Here's my headline. University of London bans burgers to help save the planet. So yes, they're doing their part to save the planet by banning burgers. Well, what can you say? This is sort of a tongue-in-cheek thing in one sense, but on the other hand, it's patently tragic. Because universities and governments, for that matter, around the world are buying in to this idea that carbon is bad and that people should do everything they can to ban carbon. This is carbon shaming. I think this ought to be a new term in our vernacular. Carbon shaming. Because it's anti-human and it's anti-civilization. We are carbon-based units. You and I are carbon-based units. If it were not for carbon, we would not be alive right now. It is absolutely necessary that we breathe in oxygen to live, and it is absolutely necessary that we breathe out carbon dioxide so that the plants in the world can use that carbon dioxide to convert it back into oxygen through the process of photosynthesis. This is simply the most basic cycle of life that we have on this planet. And to say or insinuate that carbon is the enemy of mankind is just the stupidest thing that people could say. And I hope you're not saying it, but listen, we need carbon. We can't exist without it. Every farmer that's ever had a greenhouse knows that the first thing you do with a greenhouse, that is a commercial greenhouse, is you install a CO2 concentrator to increase the levels of CO2 inside the greenhouse so that you can dramatically increase your production of fruit and vegetables or whatever it is you're growing. This has been proven over the last 50 years, ever since commercial greenhouses really came into vogue. Well, the people who are pushing climate change and anti-carbon policies have no experience in this. They have no clue what they're talking about, really. Nor do they want you to know. But I'm telling you, carbon has been our friend ever since there's been humans on planet Earth. And you take it away, the human race is going to do very poorly. This is not the time to reduce carbon in the world. If anything, if people are hungry, it's time to increase carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Well, we'll leave that story behind. The next story has to do with Seoul, Korea. They're back in the news again. They are, of course, one of the leaders of smart city technology in the world. They're not only influential in implementing it in their own city, but also they have many companies there that are providing that technology to the rest of the world. And now, Seoul, Korea, South Korea, of course, has decided that cryptocurrency is going to be integral to its transformation into a smart city. You say, well, what's the connection there? Well, I wrote in my latest book, Technocracy, the Hard Road to World Order, just a few years ago, that cryptocurrency is a futuristic tool of sustainable development. And I gave plenty of reasons for stating that. Well, this is coming to pass now, right before our eyes, as Seoul has adapted its own private cryptocurrency for its city in order to become more sustainable, more resilient, and smarter, as they say, not smart as opposed to dumb, but smart as opposed to oppressive technology to monitor, manage, and control everything in sight. So this article is very useful to read because it gives you a view into the mind of a technocrat and why they would want to use cryptocurrency as an integral part of smart city life. The article states a local digital currency separate from the national currency is an essential part of the smart city toolbox. Seoul is nearing several significant milestones in its journey toward becoming a blockchain smart city. By November, it aims to have the following in place. Number one, public services accepting Korea's national blockchain ID system as valid documentation. Number two, a blockchain system for managing part-time worker labor contracts, insurance, and work history. And number three, a native citywide cryptocurrency, which they are calling the S-Coin. And I'm sure that S stands for Seoul, probably not smart, but the name of their city. According to Block and Press, S-Coins will be redeemable for rewards and given to citizens when they use public services and participate in citizenship duties, such as paying taxes and participating in public opinion polls. Beyond that, the potential applications of a digital currency such as S-Coin are almost limitless as a way of shaping people's behavior and streamlining interactions in the smart cities of the future. This is a must-read article. You can see in here their full intention to modify people's behavior, and they're using the S-Coin as a way to do it. Well, undoubtedly, this will spread to other cities in the world, further validating blockchain technology. And it's also important to note that Seoul's implementation of blockchain technology goes far beyond just a cryptocurrency. They're going to use it for all types of identification and contracts and other items of commerce within the city. The blockchain will become an integral part all the way up and down the implementation of smart city technology in Seoul. You can look for other cities, I'm sure, to come up with such a plan on their own. And I wouldn't be surprised to see it happen in America within a few months. The last story is certainly the most serious story that we have today, and it has to do with regionalism. Regionalism, in general, is a concept that was first applied and perfected, if you will, in Russia, that is the USSR. And regionalism was their primary form of government there, setting up regional governance organizations that controlled everything within that region. And our federal administration today is actively pushing regionalism throughout the country. This has been going on for a long time through the so-called councils of governments that have blanketed our country in the last few years. Councils of governments, or COGS, C-O-G-S, are administrated by a national NGO organization called NARC, the National Association of Regional Councils. You can find that organization at narc.org, and you can quickly find the regional council that's in charge of your area. The so-called COGS network has primarily been used to control infrastructure within regions of cities. We've discussed this several times on the pages of Technocracy News and Trends. We've looked at the so-called ABAG COG up in the Bay Area, which is called ABAG, is the Association of Bay Area Governments. This is one of the biggest in the country. And they have usurped authority over their many, many cities and millions of people in that area to completely revamp and rework not only local zoning laws, but also transportation policies. And there's been a number of citizens up there trying to break this regional form of governance is patently unconstitutional, and all but two states in America are blanketed with these regional government entities. And now a new type of entity is rising up called Smart Region Initiatives. And we've talked about this before here as well. There's the genesis of SRI started right here in Tempe, Arizona, with Arizona State University leading the way, getting together with two other non-public entities to start crafting smart policy for the entire region. That is the rollout of 5G, how transportation will be fitted with sensors and so on. And the resulting non-governmental entity is going to enforce this smart city policy throughout the region. In the Phoenix area, they've already started to get close to the COGS here, which is called the Maricopa Association of Governments, or MAG. That is probably their only hope to get any type of legal authorization, and I say that in quotes, to do what they're intending to do. This is patently unconstitutional. Our government, which is still moderated by the U.S. Constitution, states in Article 4 of the Constitution, this is a direct quote, "The United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government," close quote. Now, that doesn't mean that the government is controlled by Republicans. That should be self-evident. But a republican form of government has to do with the fact that America was founded as a republic. There are certain checks and balances between the three branches of government that are intended to be there in all cases and at all times. The legislative, the judicial, and the congressional, the lawmaking branch. So now the U.S. Economic Department Administration, which is called the EDA for short, that's a division of the Department of Commerce, it is actively promoting regional collaboration, that's in quotes, and also sustainable economic development, that's in quotes. The EDA, from top to bottom, smacks of UN policies and is creating a network of unconstitutional initiatives across our country, and nobody is paying attention to it. There's virtually no pushback on smart region initiatives, much less on the COGS network, the Councils of Governments network across the country, that usurp sovereignty from local cities. In every case, as far as the COGS are concerned, every city within a jurisdiction will typically send one council member to sit on the board of the local COG. The COG, in turn, votes on policies that will be implemented throughout the region without ever submitting those votes or those actions back to the individual cities for vote by those city councils. So the individual cities just have to take it the way it is. And if they don't like it, they can withdraw their contributing member, I suppose, and pull out of the councils of governments altogether. But I don't think it's going to be that easy, because the COGS network is receiving money from the Department of Transportation to distribute to the cities. The money used to come straight down from the Department of Transportation to the individual cities. Now the COGS network stands in between, catches that money, and then holds it as a carrot to the individual cities to say, you can have your money, but you have to do what we tell you to do. You have to implement policies A, B, C, and D, and then you get your money. These are called conditionalities by the global elite. They put conditions on receiving the money, whereas there used to be no conditions. It used to be the city's money. It was just simply a return of taxpayer money that was paid to the government in the first place, and it used to just come back to the cities for their own projects. Well, not anymore. So theoretically, it's possible for a city to pull out of a council of government organization like ABAG or MAG in the Phoenix area. But if they do that, they likely are not going to receive another penny from the federal government for their own infrastructure projects. You see, there's something desperately wrong with this, isn't there? This is not constitutional in any way, shape, or form. Regionalism does not represent the people. It represents essentially a committee that makes all the important decisions for what will take place in that area and then shoves it down the city's throat. For the most part, in the Bay Area and the Phoenix area here, there's no awareness whatsoever that these organizations even exist, much less what they're doing. Asking a person on the street, have you ever heard of the Maricopa Association of Governments, or if you're up in the Bay Area, have you ever heard of the Association of Bay Area Governments? No. What's that? They wouldn't have a clue. And even if you tell them, they might say, well, that sounds pretty good. Isn't that a good thing? Say, no, we live in America. In America, our government is supposed to guarantee to every state, that would include California and Arizona, a Republican form of government. That is, elected representatives represent the people to act in the people's best interests. That was the whole idea from the beginning, was for citizens to elect responsible individuals to represent them in the civic arena. This policy has been broken down throughout America. Now, this is especially tragic when you consider all the combat that's going on, in a sense, in Washington, D.C., with all of the drama between Democrats and Republicans fighting like cats and dogs. Republicans are blaming Democrats for everything, and Democrats are blaming Republicans for everything. And in the meanwhile, a Republican administration is actively pushing regionalism to the whole country. But don't get excited about that, because before Trump was elected president, Obama was doing the same thing. And don't get upset with that, because before Obama, George Bush was doing the same thing. But don't get upset about that, because before George W. Bush, Bill Clinton and Al Gore were doing exactly the same thing. This is not a political divide issue. This has been a full court press that's been going on within the administration of our government to convert us from being a constitutional republic into being a system run by regional governance and regionalization. And lastly, just as a side comment, it wouldn't hurt to bring up the name of Jeffrey Epstein just one more time. I noted a few weeks ago that when Epstein first came into the news, he was arrested at that time, that he had formerly been a member of the Trilateral Commission. And that was absolutely true. He was either booted or he resigned from the Trilateral Commission after his first pedophile conviction back in 2008. And the Trilateral Commission never put his name forward again. But his name was there, and he was one of those movers and shakers at one point in time. And now he's dead. Nobody in the country that I can see so far believes that his death was a suicide. Just doesn't add up. One person has already said that the so-called suicide death will bring up a mystery and investigation greater than JFK. And I think they're probably right. Within a month or two, the mainstream media will completely have forgotten about Jeffrey Epstein. You watch. He's in the news right now, but it's going to die down. Life will move on. They'll find other things to write and propagandize over, but it won't be Jeffrey Epstein. In closing, I would like to encourage you to share this podcast with other people that you know. You can do so by copying the link either off of the current platform that you're hearing this broadcast in. That could be Podbean, it could be iTunes, it could be Spotify, or it could be directly off of the webpage of technocracy.news. Please share this podcast with other people that you know. There's many people who, for one reason or another, cannot read conveniently. Maybe they don't have access during work hours or whatever to a browser. Maybe they just don't have time. But many people do have time to listen and will listen if they have something worthwhile to listen to. And I can't think of anything more worthwhile to listen to than news about technocracy and how it's engulfing our nation. So this is important. Please just take a minute whenever you listen to a podcast and share it wherever you can, either by email or on a social media account or even word of mouth. It really helps get the word out. Well, I'm Patrick Wood for Technocracy News and Trends. See you next time.